What do you think?
I think we're dead meat. Real dead meat.
You're dead meat!
Go ahead and laugh, you guys. If I ever find a little bastard that did this, you're dead meat.
Welcome to the Dead Meat Podcast, an extension of the YouTube channel Dead Meat. I'm James.
I'm Chelsea, and this is Lucy's butt. And... James and I was gonna, I was gonna tell me and Lucy's butt are engaged. We like to get scared together. Hi.
Hey.
Coming to you live again from quarantine 2020.
Yep.
Yeah. We're gonna review From Beyond this week. Because unfortunately Stuart Gordon has passed away at the age of 72. And we all know Reanimator pretty well. We love Reanimator.
It's one of my favorites too.
I could watch it over and over again, and I like it more every time I watch it. I think it's so smart and so funny, and I love everything about it. But From Beyond is one that I think he's also known for, but it is definitely lesser known than Reanimator.
It escaped my viewing up until now.
Yeah.
As someone who was obsessed with Reanimator as a kid, I never got around to watching From Beyond, which is weird.
And it's great because it is like I'm trying to think of other directors that have that kind of crew of, like, Quentin Tarantino's got his kind of crew of actors, and Wes Anderson does too. And this is I think Stuart Gordon had kind of a little crew too, at least people I associate with him. And by that, I mean, we have Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton and, Brian Yuzna producing.
Oh, yeah. This whole thing, it's got makeup effects by John Buechler, also sadly passed recently.
Yeah.
It was an Empire Pictures production, just like Reanimator was. That means E.P. Charles Band, music, Richard Band. Like, it's, yeah.
Okay, can we talk about just really briefly, that piece of trivia you told me today that, like, absolutely blew my mind.
Yeah, this blew my mind. Okay, so in the early 2000s, 2001, there was that song, what was it?
If I could.
That song, I know you've heard it, because it was named, Billboard named it the number one song of the aughts, because it spent like 43 weeks at number one on the, like, adult top four. That band, I forgot the name of the band, like the Windows or something, or the Clearing or some shit. But regardless, the singer and songwriter of that song was Charles Band's son. I believe Alan Band, is that his name? Start with an A.
There's
for sure.
There's so many bands.
There's
I'm
a lot
up.
Of bands, yeah. And not just, you know, not musical bands, the band family.
It turns out there's a lot of songs with the lyrics, if I could, I would, so I can't Google it. Lots of different things coming up. I think I even saw a Fish song come up, because of course.
Oh, of course. Yes, From Beyond was also written by Dennis Paoli, who he co-wrote Reanimator. He's written some other Brian Yuzna stuff. I mean,
it's also an H.P. Lovecraft adaptation, so it is nuts that... Especially you hadn't seen this.
I can't believe I never saw this before. And with Ken Foray is in it, too.
Yes, what a great surprise. So From Beyond, H.P. Lovecraft adaptation. I went and read the short story, too.
Oh, yeah, how was that?
It was an H.P. Lovecraft short story.
Because I haven't read Lovecraft. I have one on my nightstand. It's queued up. I have like 25 books.
You have
a
lot of books. Yeah. We need another bookshelf. Yeah, the short story, it's pretty standard Lovecraft. I've read a little bit of Lovecraft lately. I've read Color Out of Space because I was considering doing that for the podcast. Maybe I'll do that eventually.
Yeah, I'm doing it for a Patreon review this month, so if that's
the movie.
Yeah, the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, you were considering reading
the short story.
I got it. Okay.
And it's funny because H.P. Lovecraft adaptations, and in my limited experience reading him, it's hard to adapt to stuff because his stories are, in my experience, it's a dude sitting down with another dude, and the one dude is like, I saw the most fucked up shit. Let me tell you all about it, but I can't even describe how fucked up it was. It's crazy. So it just all is like this secondhand fucked up that he can't even describe because it's so terrifying, you know? And especially, you know, these short stories, it's like the way he takes From Beyond, especially, I mean, just the bare bones of that story are what comprise this. It really is such a cool expansion, because the short story we have, it's a guy going to visit his friend long after he's been kind of kicked out of his friend's house. And the friend is Jeffrey Combs' character, Crawford.
Okay.
So Crawford is the one in the short who's kind of he's like a Herbert West, pretty much. He's like the science obsessed, like he's gone too far, and his pursuit of science has driven him crazy. And he invites his friend back over after he boots him out of his house for telling him, like, hey man, you should take it easy a little bit. So he invites his friend back over, which makes his friend all scared, and he basically is like, I built a machine that will stimulate the pineal gland?
They say pineal, so I'm just going to take their word for it.
It stimulates the pineal gland, and it's going to reactivate these evolutionary features that humans have that we don't have need of anymore, like our vestigial, I forget what those are called,
where yeah.
they're like leftover, like the little leftover bits that we don't need anymore, and we're going to, you know, we have five senses, but I'm going to open up more. And
okay, they borrow that for the
That's what I mean. It's like the very basic like short story just blown up into a movie with like more than two characters.
And I'm assuming there wasn't a Barbara Crampton type character.
No,
there.
Not H.P. Lovecraft. I don't think has many female characters.
Yeah.
Again, H.P. Lovecraft is like, dude, you gotta come over. I gotta tell you about this fucked up shit I did and or saw.
Yeah, Gordon did a little bit of Poe as well. He did Pit and the Pendulum and The Black Cat. He did a lot of stage stuff. Mm-hmm. That was where he came from mostly. I'm just going to give a little bit of Gordon background info before we start talking about From Beyond, just to honor the man who, you know, Reanimator has, I've always counted it among my favorite horror movies. So yeah. I got to honor this guy. He also helped write The Dentist, which was covered on The Kill Count, and which is better than it has any right to be, I think.
Yeah, I remember watching that with you and being kind of blown away by how the tone of that was not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I thought it'd be much worse. And that was directed, of course, by his friend, Brian Usna, who produced this movie. But yeah, Gordon comes from a background of theatrical work, a lot of experimental, controversial stuff, starting from when he was in college. He's from Chicago originally, Midwest area, hung out in Wisconsin for a while, but was a very anti-war guy, because when he was in college, that was Vietnam. He was in college, I believe, in 68, which is like peak hippie era. He and his then girlfriend were arrested for protesting the Vietnam War, and that was
the
DNC.
Or were they arrested at the DNC or no?
No, they I believe he wrote a play based it was he wrote a anti-war adaptation of Peter Pan that compared I think it was Captain Hook to Mayor Daley, the pirates were the Chicago police. And yeah, so he's done a lot of weird shit in the theater. And he was arrested for civil disobedience with his then girlfriend, who became his wife that year in 68, and who was with him until he died.
Wow.
And who is in From Beyond. She's in Reanimator as a doctor. She has a bigger role as a doctor
as
From
also
Beyond.
A doctor. It is so sad that we are slowly just losing this class of horror greats who were really affected by stuff like Vietnam, and it gave them such a distinct voice in terms of the horror specifically that they made. Like, you look at him, an anti-war activist, and Romero also,
of course,
very influenced by Vietnam. Like, you know, I could talk for days about Night of the Living Dead and how influenced it is by Vietnam, and he clearly an anti-war guy. John Carpenter too.
Yeah.
And you have all these like very distinct voices that are, funnily enough, anti-violence, anti-war. These are not, contrary to maybe what a lot of people think of horror filmmakers and horror fans, these aren't like sickos. These are you know, a group of legends who like deeply cared about humans, and it's sad that
Wes Craven.
Yeah, and again, also like his work super influenced by Vietnam and the war, and it's so sad that we're losing these guys, because they really you know, for as much as the world wants to think that, again, horror filmmakers are a bunch of sick weirdos, no, these are men who had a lot of very like fascinating, like deeply thoughtful things to say about humans and violence. And so it's, you know, especially I think right now, because the world's so chaotic, I'm like getting, well, I mean, I'm sad thinking about losing these guys who really made art speaking truth to power in such a cool way.
I forget what Hooper's personal or political views were.
I mean, Hooper also, like, Texas Chainsaw is extremely politically charged.
Yeah.
And he, I think, similarly, like, that same vibe of young, affected by the youth politics of the time.
And just selfishly, it sucks that we're getting to a point where, you know, like, I've sat down with Joe Dante and Mick Garris, and it's so cool to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's too late for me to do that with Romero, Craven.
I will say, like,
Gordon.
You know, and it sucks because right now the state of horror conventions is just like, we don't know because Texas Frightmare is delayed now. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all delayed. But if you have the chance to go to any of these and you can afford it, go meet the greats if you can.
Barker was gonna be at Texas Frightmare.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an opportunity that if it comes up again,
go meet
and you're
Barker,
able to fucking
David
do it.
David Cronenberg, I hope he goes to the rescheduled Texas Frightmare.
Yeah.
Because David fucking Cronenberg.
Yeah. Those two and Carpenter, I feel, might be the last of, I don't know, maybe that era that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Usna's still around, too. You know, mm-hmm. And I really feel for Usna and Crampton and Combs, who have been posting about.
That's the thing, too,
like,
is
such a tight-knit group.
We talked kind of briefly about how he has this kind of group that he worked with regularly throughout his life. And that's something where I always love seeing a director, because that tells me that working with that director is something really special, because I don't know why you would subject yourself over and over again to working with a director who either, like, made you uncomfortable or was, like, a pain in the ass to work with. Especially, you know, someone like Barbara Crampton, who in this and Reanimator is nude and in some very sexually charged scenes. But we've even seen her in person talking about working on Reanimator specifically and how she was made to feel really comfortable and always appreciated working in that capacity with Stewart and with, like, the crew and everything, because it didn't feel exploitive at all. And I'm really sad for all of them. I can tell that it's amazing just to see, like, that's, you know, throughout the years that friend group has, we even kind of saw a little bit of it when we met the Reanimator crew at mm-hmm. Texas Frightmare, because they all were kind of lined up in booths, and, like, their chemistry is just out of control, and Barbara's joking that she has to be in the middle of the two boys because they, you know, like, you have to put them on either side of the room in timeout because they'll just cause too much trouble together. Like,
I know,
these years later.
I wish we had some Bruce Abbott.
Me too. I was missing Bruce Abbott, but I'll take Ken Foray as kind
of
the third wheel.
Especially with some of the stuff he's wearing in here.
Oh my God.
And two other people who just I didn't know were longtime collaborators with Stuart Gordon, David Mamet.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Playwrights and stage
stuff
with him.
I think he wrote something this week that was very thoughtful and really nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then George Wendt, I didn't realize he did so much stage work. He acted in a lot of these plays that were written by Mamet and directed by Gordon.
And that's the cool thing, too, about having a horror director that is also a stage director, which means the performances he gets out of his actors are so fucking good. And that, for me especially, is a big, like, I love, you know, there's a certain kind of horror movie I love where the performances are bad and everything is bad and it can be really fun. But at the same time, having a horror movie where the concept is so absurd and to have the actors be so fucking good and, like, 100% bought in makes his movie so compelling, and you're never, like, it never overstays its welcome, you know.
Yeah.
Even though it's, like, totally schlocky and cheesy, and this one especially is so, like, disgusting and
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. While watching this, I was thinking about how he's not exactly a visual director, because, you know, broadly I break down the director's duties into two large camps: the visual side, you know, choosing your shots and everything, which the DP obviously helps a lot with, and then directing your actors. Like, those are the two, I think, big pools of thing. And I know that when I was directing stuff in college, I cared more about, like, shot selection than working with actors, and some directors can do both, some excel one towards the other. Gordon is a director who you can really count on for performances. Mm-hmm. And Reanimator was his first movie. That was in 85, and he was in his late 30s by then. I forget if he was 37, 38. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he had this whole career as a stage director first, and that really translates into how he directs his movies, because I know with Reanimator, at least, they would rehearse a whole lot and really find the tone of what they wanted to do in the scenes with that just, like, bleak humor.
Yeah, and it's so pitch perfect. That's why it's great. That movie I don't love nearly as much if their chemistry as a group isn't so good.
Sometimes there are good shots. I really like the one of the three of them in the van as they're driving up to the, like, simple shots like that work. But really, it's about the performances, and especially Jeffrey Combs, who is just, man, I just love what he does.
Love Jeffrey Combs so much. Every time I watch him in anything, I'm like, God, I fucking love Jeffrey Combs. He's so good. And it's like, he's someone who commits to fucking everything. And like, I couldn't help but think of when we interviewed Heather on the podcast, and she talked about how a moment she had with Wes Craven, speaking of just this league of masters, having a moment with him on set of Nightmare, where he, I think they did a take and he was like, I finally felt like in that moment you bought it. You bought into it. And it's hard to get an actor there, because horror especially, like, it doesn't help that it's the genre that's seen as like, I guess I'm going to do this and then hopefully it gets me other work. Mm-hmm. So there's already kind of an incentive to not commit to it, you know? So it's super impressive to me when you have a horror director that, like, is able to get his actors there, and like, you believe them 100%, and they are like, they believe the world that they're in, and you can tell they're not self-conscious about it.
Yeah, so you have Jeffrey Combs in here doing, like we said, a great performance. It's as though Herbert West were not evil. It's weird to have him play such a sympathetic character after watching all those Reanimators where Herbert West is such a bastard.
When I read the short story, I realized, like, I wonder if that's part of the reason that character is tweaked and he's like the assistant to the guy who is the mad scientist. Because in the short story, he's just the mad scientist, and it would just be Jeffrey Combs playing Herbert West again, and that's not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Likewise, Barbara Crampton is in a much different character here than in Reanimator. I know that while she enjoyed being in Reanimator, I believe that she has said, well, the character doesn't get to do much. And that's fair. That's one of my only complaints about the movie.
Yeah.
Is her character is so passive.
Her character is acted upon, and it doesn't...
Exactly. All she exists for is to be, like, kidnapped and used as, like, motivation for the other mm-hmm. characters. Here, she's probably
the main character.
She is the main character. She's the most active character. She's the one driving all the action. She gets to be like a, you know, smart looking, quote unquote, like, doctor in the beginning. And then the middle, she does this like leather. Oh my God.
She's in like a dominatrix outfit.
It is.
It's wild.
It is. She gets intense.
She's all over the map in this movie, and it's a lot of fun. Like,
yeah,
she's...
it'd be a great role to play, and I'm sure I believe she has said that she enjoyed this role.
Yeah, I think
more.
I forget if it was when, I think it might have been when we did the Reanimator screening and we saw like the panel interview. I think they talked about this, and she's like, I wish, like, that's the movie she wants more people to have seen.
Yeah.
Which is a cool thing too, especially considering how sexual the role is.
It is, and
it's cool to me that this is then a role that the actress playing is like, I wish more people knew me for this one, because I'm really proud of it, because the role itself is really good. And again, that speaks to how I feel it must have been to work with Stuart Gordon as a director. The fact that this is a role that is so sexual, and there's tons of nudity, and it's like, it's very explicit, but this was still... it's a really good role, and filming it must have been great, and it's something that it's work that she's really proud of.
Yeah, I didn't think we would be watching a movie hornier than Reanimator, but
this is way hornier than
yeah.
It's also weird seeing Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton this like kissing and
like
stuff.
Making out and stuff, because
so
their characters hate
the
each other in
so
Reanimator.
Yeah.
Well, they're also a couple in Castle Freak, Stuart Gordon film,
and another band production, right?
I believe that is.
It's a full moon.
Is it 100%? It's either the first full. It's either one of the first full moon or one of the last Empire pictures.
Yeah.
It was right there on that transition from one to the other. Because, yeah, you're right. I think it is Full Moon, but it's doesn't feel like Puppet Master Full Moon mm-hmm. or Demonic Toys Full Moon. It feels more like an Empire picture, because I think it was right around when they had to turn it around. I think because of, like, bankruptcy laws or some shit. I forget. Charles Band is wild, man. I just watched a featurette on him.
It'd be cool to do a deep dive Charles Band episode.
He has, like, hundreds of
I know.
Movies.
We couldn't watch all the...
No.
But just a history of... Charles yeah. Band would be kind of fun, but yeah.
But yeah, so obviously those two have worked together a lot, and their chemistry here is great. Are we ready to start talking about the movie itself?
Yeah,
because it's from Beyond, from 1986, the year after Reanimator, and
they must have gone right into filming this then.
They must have, yeah, right away.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it starts with Jeffrey Combs as Dr. Is he a doctor? Crawford Tillinghast.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
But they just call him Crawford.
Crawford.
I think he's a doctor.
Well, he's hanging out with, I believe, the doctor.
Pretorius.
Pretorius.
Dr.
That's
Pretorius,
right.
Yeah. Played by Ted Sorrell, who I don't know why looks so fucking familiar to me.
Yeah, his
he's
his
in Basket Case,
not,
too.
Yeah, which we haven't
but
watched.
But I don't know what else I just know him from. It's driving me nuts, but... Yeah, he, you know, classic H.P. Lovecraft, obsessed doctor. They've got this machine going.
The resonator.
The resonator. When you turn it on.
These tuning forks vibrate at
tuning,
a frequency.
I know, I thought of Phantasm.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of those dwarves is going to come out and be like, oh, shit.
Oh, wrong movie.
Yeah.
And that activates your pineal gland and then allows you to see these little eel things.
Yeah. In the short story, it's basically described as, and I you kind of get a visual of this in the opening credits where, like, the background is just a bunch of, like, writhing kind of worms and stuff. And so you see, like, these eel creatures, and in the movie, there's kind of, like, a few of them swimming around. But in the short story, it's described as, like, they're everywhere and, like, passing through each other and through... It is, like, the space that isn't space. It, like, is the everything that comprises nothing.
Yeah, and he describes... Like, Combs describes it as such. He's like, they're all around you.
Yeah.
You just can't see it when it's... But, like, when it's activated, you only see a few floating around because of effects and stuff.
I just don't... Yeah, I can't think of a... Yeah,
a good depiction
this
of it.
Works, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it works in the way that old 80s B movie effects work. They're fun.
It's
like
great.
The effects.
I think I love the effects in this. It's amazing.
Yeah, because it's a mix of those weird visual effects and then a lot
then
of
body
practical
horror.
Body horror.
Yeah, lots of body horror in this. Big fan of body horror.
Yeah, Cronenberg.
Yeah.
So yeah, one of those eels bites Jeffrey Combs in the cheek, and he runs and goes gets Pretorius, mm-hmm. and then he brings him over to the machine, and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, because they can tell something is coming. They don't know what,
mm-hmm.
but something is on its way. It's not just the little eel things. There's just something.
Yeah, some it they
keep
calling it.
Yeah, which is fucking terrifying.
So Lovecraftian.
It's very Stranger Things, too.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, it's just something's there.
And we get a lot of colors in this movie when the resonator's going off.
Yeah, the use of color is so nice.
A lot of pinks and purples.
So the fucking neighbor comes over because I just feel like these two boys are always causing a ruckus.
Yeah, they're at it again.
They're at it again.
Broken windows and colored lights. This is the same woman who is in the beginning of Reanimator who barges in on Jeffrey Combs when his doctor friend's eyes are bursting
this
out.
This woman's life is always being disrupted by Jeffrey Combs doing science.
Yeah.
It's like her very specific acting niche. So she comes over and basically... There's this whole scene where we see that Pretorius has had his head twisted.
Yeah, it's like a little nub.
It's like a nub, and
it's
he's
great.
Laying there because we see the old lady's dog is
licking at it.
So, okay, R.A.P. Pretorius, and then this all makes Jeffrey Combs lose it, and he gets sent to an asylum.
I guess an asylum, yeah, that's headed by Dr. Block, played by Stuart Gordon's wife, Carolyn Purdy Gordon, I believe is her name.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, she was a doctor. She was Dan's head doctor in Reanimator.
That's right.
Kept telling him, like, you can't.
That's right. He's trying to resuscitate mm-hmm. her. I'm remembering exactly who she is.
Yeah, it's like a bit role, but.
Okay. Yeah.
I just love that they were together his whole life from college to when he died.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, love is real, guys. Then Barbara Crampton shows up, and she's looking very different than reanimated. I feel like they've somehow in the span of a year, they aged her like 15 years from her character in Reanimator. She's got this like braid and glasses, and so we know she's smart. And yeah, she's here to be serious. And I'm thinking, like, is she a reporter? But no, she's also a doctor. And
works with schizophrenics.
Yeah, she works with schizophrenics. And she is talking shit because she's like, you keep these people here, you lock them up. And I'm like, yeah, that's fucked up. But then the other doctor's like, well, you do experiments on them. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe, you know, just both options in this universe, not ideal. It's like locked up or be experimented on.
Yeah, and you definitely get, when she's walking down the hallway and looking in the windows at the different patients, you know, you get the usual, it's crazy people being crazy. There's a guy like masturbating with his back to her.
Sure, yeah. But Silence of the Lambs, where yeah. It's like, yeah.
Other than that, I feel like the movie is surprisingly sympathetic towards schizophrenics.
Yeah.
Because Crampton really wants to like work to heal them. She says that her dad was schizophrenic. And
yeah, it's you know, aside from the pretty typical scene of, yeah, like you said, going down the hall, we're in the asylum and there's a different type of crazy person in each room. But mm-hmm. besides that, like, we're not seeing any stereotypical, you know, imagery of mental patients. It's like, we're discussing schizophrenia, but it's like, that's just the, you know, the motivation for her to like, well, maybe I can use this machine to...
Because she even says the machine activates your pineal gland and makes you see these things. Maybe that's causing the schizophrenia.
Yeah, maybe schizophrenia is the result of an overactive pineal gland. Yeah. Let's study this. And like that's
so I find that interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's at Miskatonic University, of course.
Yeah, Miskatonic.
Barbara Crampton convinces the cop there, just some random cop, to...
Yeah, who is this dude? Looks like he wandered in from the wrong way. He wandered in from like a fucking Scorsese movie. Where
yeah,
because
he swaps
extra.
Out with Ken Foray, who is also a cop, who
guy,
I don't know why he wasn't there from the beginning.
This guy's like, he would be played by like a Mark Wahlberg kind of.
Oh,
like,
for
he's,
sure.
He's such a departed
Departed Mark
cop.
Wahlberg, for sure, yeah.
Like, what movie did you come from, dude? Yeah, so she's like, please let me take Jeffrey Combs. I'm going to go borrow him for a day, I guess. We're going to reproduce his experiment for science. Please, please, please. And she tells Jeffrey Combs, I'm your doctor now. I feel like this is an ethical, ethically weird thing to do, but I don't make the rules. So she takes Jeffrey Combs and Ken Foray, who is
Bubba. His friends call him Bubba.
The cop assigned to this case, I guess. He's there to supervise. So, and that's when Jeffrey Combs realizes he's being driven back to the fucking house that this machine is in the attic of. And yep. And he can't get out of the van because the child locks are on.
What street is it? Benevolent?
Benevolent.
It's 666 Benevolent Ave or something?
Benevolent Street, which it is Benevolent Street in the short story.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Not 666, I don't think. But yeah, the house is on Benevolent Street.
So yeah, those are our three characters for a little while at least.
And they're a fine three characters to be watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
What a fun. I was like, damn, these are three attractive people.
I know.
That I'm in love with. And, you know, I love all of them.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, Jeffrey Combs is not wearing glasses as in this role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I feel like he maybe looks a little similar to me.
I could see it.
If you combined him and Bruce Abbott,
I think
you might get me.
For sure. I could see that. If they, in like the dream version of Reanimator where they're allowed to be in love and they somehow
have a baby.
Herbert does science and is like, I found a way for us to have a baby. That's like the sequel I want to make. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. And Jeffrey Combs is about Barbara Crampton's height. He is a shorter man. I believe he's like 5'8" or shorter.
Ken Foray's tall.
What is he? 6'4" at least.
Tall.
Yeah.
We look very small. It's one of those like we do a lot of conventions, obviously. And I love pictures of both of us where we're next to like a really tall celebrity because we always look like their kids.
Yeah.
We always look like it's the first day of school. We're taking a picture with dad or something.
I think Kathleen Kinmont from the second Reanimator, she's like 6".
She's
a little bit taller than me. Yeah.
Oh, she was so fun.
She
I would party with her.
Dude. Oh, fuck yeah.
She's so cool.
I know.
We'll have to do Bride of Reanimator sometime.
Okay.
For the podcast. I love that movie.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So they go to turn this machine back on. And at this point, like, everyone thinks that Jeffrey Combs just like murdered his his boss and like ripped his head. I don't know what they, because they would have inspected the body. It clearly has been twisted and ripped off. So I don't know what the fuck they think.
There is a little chalk outline with a little nub of the head there.
Yes, with the little nubby head.
Yeah, I love, like, I've seen the joke a bunch of times. I forget which parody movies it's in, but a funny chalk outline.
Funny chalk outlines are weird.
Yeah, like this, I like them.
There are little gags in this that are, again, Reanimator is the same thing too, where it's like very dry funny that it kills me.
Yeah, I think Reanimator is funnier.
Reanimator's a funnier
intentionally
movie.
So. Yeah. But this one is hornier, at least.
Yeah, I need to make up for it. Sure.
Because yeah, when they get there, Ken Foray finds a videotape of that expired doctor whipping a topless woman. It's like a BDSM video.
We watched, what did we watch? Did we just watch it for fun, Waxwork?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if we, I was like, was that for anything? Or we just like put that on? Yeah, we watched Waxwork. I forget what year that's from, but that also had a whole BDSM plot line. And I'm curious. And if you could think of other 80s horror films specifically, or maybe even 80s films, but horror specifically obviously would be more useful for me. But if you could think of other movies where there's a female character that like has this kinky like BDSM side to her, like
that's repressed.
It's like forced out of her by events of the film. Like it happens
it
here.
Definitely happens in
Waxwork. There's a wax figure of the Marquis de Sade that this one girl who's like very wholesome and is wearing like a cute little sundress the whole movie that she just can't like rip her eyes away from. And then she was like, she steps into the waxwork scene of the Marquis de Sade and doesn't want to leave.
Yeah,
she's
like, he's like impressed by how depraved she is.
Yeah, he's like, dude, you're fucked up. And she's like, I want to live here forever. If anyone can think, because I'm fascinated by that, especially because this is the 80s where it's like super repressed, you know?
Well, even here at the end, it's implied that because Pretorius was into that kind of stuff, that he was he's called a eunuch and impotent. It's a weird happens right at the end where they're
I wanted to talk more about that, where it's like there's some weird sexual stuff going on here.
Yeah.
That he like can't perform sexually, and so he instead substitutes violence for sex. I don't know.
And I think it also is probably tied to a line that it sounds like was taken from the short story, because Combs says that Dr. Pretorius, the five senses weren't enough for him. So it sounds like that character was meant to be like, oh, I can't, you know, I need to feel so extreme.
It's Hellraiser a little bit.
Hellraiser. Which also late 80s, BDSM.
It's repressed sex.
This might be a good episode
in
the future.
Yeah, repressed sex and horror. Well, because it's the 80s especially. It's that family values decade,
that Reagan era.
It's repressed sexuality, fear of sex, especially. We've got the AIDS epidemic. Sex is scary. Mm-hmm. Sex is to be feared and sex is bad. And yeah, so I guess even characters in general where it's like this, like, you know, sex being unleashed, or it's like they have no choice but to become a sexual being. You know, maybe it's fulfilling this fantasy of like, well, I don't want to admit that I want to be sexual because that's bad. But if I don't have the choice, then I can safely explore this fantasy, you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, that could be a future topic to discuss. But anyway, they turn the machine on and there's little eels. And Ken Frey's like, oh, cool. So this is real, I guess.
Yeah, although before they turned on the machine, he was getting hungry and made, what did he make in that pot?
If anyone can tell us what this food is.
It's like a single shot. They could have cut it and no big deal.
I want to know what this food is so bad.
It looks a bunch of cauliflowers in a pot, but I think it was a shepherd's pie type situation.
I swear to God, if that's the thing that Stuart Gordon took to his grave, I'm never going to sleep.
The recipe for Ken Foray's
shepherd's pie. Just like, what is this food?
I think it's a shepherd's pie. I think those are mashed potatoes
I think it's
on
like,
top of
like
a stew.
Little mini shepherd, you know, like they're in...
Yeah, because he scooped one for each of them and then two for himself.
Yeah, I thought maybe they were giant biscuits and gravy.
Oh, yeah.
Or they even looked cauliflower size and shaped. I'm like, what the fuck am I looking at? But it looks good.
Yeah.
I need to know.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? It wasn't eels. It was more like squid-like things that appear when they turn it on as a group.
Oh, there's a few different things that kind of show up.
Yeah, and the squid
there's
thing
some,
is what?
There's some, like, alien, like, a xenomorph baby-looking thing.
Yeah. This is also, when they turn it on, Barbara Crampton and Jeffrey Combs start looking at each other real sensually, and Ken Foray looks over
them. I'm here too, guys.
Yeah, he sees them, and he's just like, oh, man.
Ken Foray's so funny in this.
Oh, man.
So they have the machine running, and Pretorius shows up. And, you know,
God, I forgot about all this.
Yeah, earlier I said Gordon's visual directing wasn't that interesting. I really like the shot of when he... secondly, but firstly, when he first shows up, his face is all in shadow.
Yeah, it's nice.
Except for the sides of his head are like lit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weird like lighting, and then he comes fully into frame, and it's really cool. But yes, he is also butt-ass naked. He's got a very hairy chest.
He's got like a hairy back.
Yeah, and shoulders. He's got that shoulder hair from dude from Alien Resurrection. And he's got a butt that we see in a shot. The butt looks weirdly fake.
Oh, I think maybe it is a fake butt, but he's also very shiny. Like he's
very
all
shiny,
lubed up kind of.
And then when Jeffrey Combs goes to touch his shoulder, kind of like digs
body,
into his
it's
skin.
Like, oh, it's like waxy.
No, because Squand has to be underwater.
No, that's right.
Or else it's
like
just
no,
sand.
It's like that kinetic sand. That's like a toy now.
Oh, I need to see that.
Yeah, it's basically Squand, but not wet.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, well, we should get some.
Dry Squand.
No. I think thinking about his visual direction, like, I agree to a point. Like, maybe the framing isn't necessarily super crazy interesting, but his use of color is, like, so...
That's true.
And that could also be a product of stage experience, because dealing with color and lighting is...
I was reading in a 2000 early 2000s interview when he was talking about the Peter Pan thing that was when he was arrested. He said that when they went to Netherland, it was meant to be an acid trip. And so what they did was project a hallucinogenic light show onto 7 naked women's bodies on stage.
Oh, cool.
And so, yeah, I imagine a lot of colors.
Light and color. Yeah. So it makes sense. Yeah. When I think of this reanimator is like very distinct uses of like specific colors. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Like that makes sense that would translate from a stage career.
Mm-hmm. So Pretorius ends up. So yes, he says that it's him.
He's Pinhead. He shows up and is like, I have, instead of Pinhead, it's just like a naked guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, I have such sights to show you, Barbara Crampton. Hey.
And then he wipes his face off.
Oh, I love this. Where it's after Jeffrey Combs goes to like touch him because he can't. He's like, but you died. And he's like, yeah, I did. But now I've come back from beyond.
So yeah,
he's
it's
like,
just a body.
He's not dead. He's, you know, he just is in this other.
I'd still put him on the kill count.
Sure.
But
our ideas of living and death in this universe are clearly not so black and white.
Yeah.
But yeah, after his shoulder gets all mashed in, he's like, ha ha ha, and then he like goes and kind of like rips his face off, and he's like, it's just a face. And it's such a great, I love this whole scene where he just is laughingly like ripping himself apart.
His
and
head
just
splits open.
It's so, like, the effects in this part especially,
it's so cool.
Like his muscles start just like splitting away from his face,
so,
and there's
gooey,
all kinds of tendrils and like snapping, and it's so fucking cool. And yeah, everyone's like all fucking traumatized.
Well, as soon as that starts happening, Ken Foray pulls out his gun and like shoots
at
him. And then I think they turn off the machine and he disappears. And Ken Foray, I must say, has the widest shooting stance I've ever seen. It looks like he's riding an invisible horse. his legs are so far apart.
Oh my God. Anytime in a horror movie where there's like some display of body horror or like something that is so visually like indescribable and would be just like infinitely traumatic to see in person, it's always funny to me when someone fires a gun at it. Like, there's otherworldly, like, okay, fine.
He doesn't hesitate.
What else am
He's
I
going
to do? Just shoot it. I think that happened in the Colorado Space, too, where there's just, like, this monster, and, like, the first reaction I think a cop has is, just, okay, I'm just going to shoot it.
Yeah, and in this, it's like, the thing isn't even advancing on him. He's
no,
not necessarily
just
being
like,
a threat.
Nope, too
but
fucking weird. Shoot that. It. It's too weird. Must kill immediately. It's like never not funny to me.
Yeah. So the next morning, that experience has had an effect on all of them because they all have like headaches.
Just having breakfast, they're all hungover.
Yeah. Ken Foray says he had a major hard on.
Oh yeah. Well, because we see how like they like clearly Barbara and Jeffrey just like are ready to fuck right there, and then we learn later Ken Foray's like, yeah, I had a hard on the whole time, but no one asked me about that, did they? Just, I'm letting you all know that was my experience. So apparently this the pineal gland stimulates your sex drive also.
Yes, and you know,
I don't, how much of this is science?
I don't know, because I know that I learned about the pineal gland in college when I got my brain behavior and cognitive science degree. I know for a fact that it is an endocrine organ that secretes the hormone melatonin, but your brain organs do a lot of different things, so it could very well also be involved in libido. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not. Anyway, Barbara Crampton wants to do this again.
Yeah, she's science. Like, I'm ready to go do it again. And no, it's not because it makes me horny. It's because my dad had schizophrenia, and don't you all feel bad now? Like, that's pretty much how this conversation goes. Is everyone's like, no, Barbara, we can't turn the machine back on just because it's going to make you too horny, and it's too crazy. Like, no, we're done. They did it.
Let's take a nap and think about it.
Let's take a nap. And she's like, no, yes, it makes me horny. But also, my dad died in an asylum. And how don't you all feel like assholes now? And they do. So,
yeah, so they all go and take a nap. I don't know if they brought overnight bags, but she's in a full nightgown.
They must have, because everyone's outfits in this are fucking crazy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so they all go to bed. Yeah. Jeffrey Combs is sleeping with a leopard print blanket next to a giant picture of an upskirt with
it's
bush.
It's just like a crotch. Yeah,
yeah, it's bush just a crotch.
And is this just where he sleeps normal? Like, is this his little, like, assistant bed?
I guess, because then what? Is Ken Foray in the other doctor's bed? I don't know.
I think maybe the implication is, like, there's two beds in there, because later he's like, yeah, Retorius would just bring women here, and I would just have to, like, lay there and listen to them.
I feel like it's through the walls. I don't think he's in this corner of the room.
But I bet that's, I don't know, man. I don't know what goes on in this house.
Well, she wakes up and she can't go to sleep, so she takes her weird little nightie upstairs.
Oh, this gross, uncomfortable-looking nightie. I don't know how you would sleep.
It's like wearing a doily.
Yeah, and like it's just, I can tell exactly what that fabric feels like, and I'm just like,
it's not pleasant.
It doesn't look comfortable at all.
Yeah, so she goes upstairs and she turns on that fucking resonator.
She's like, well, if I just do it by myself, it'll be fine, because then there's not multiple people. No, she's just talking herself in circles to, like, if I just go upstairs and do it myself, it'll be fine. So she turns it back on again, and is this when she...
So the Dr. Pretoria shows up again.
Yeah.
Talking to her, and yeah, things get wild real fast.
Yeah. The rest of this movie feels like a blur, honestly.
Well, what happens in this quick succession of things is, I think he shows up, Pretoria shows up, and this is when he rips open her shirt, so mm-hmm. we get our Barbara Crampton nudity, and then his fingers grow and they move below
frame.
Yeah,
I think this all wakes up Jeffrey Combs too.
It does.
She tries making out with him when she turns the machine back on too. This is like where she like forces her.
No, I think that's a little later.
Is it? There's a bunch of times where it's like Barbara gets horny again
and turns on the machine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think this one she's just with Edward, who is starting to like assault her, and then
he grows his fingers all along, and like,
yeah,
I don't know, she's getting her head sucked on.
She does get her head sucked on, which is wild. And then Jeffrey Combs is like, we'll go in the basement and turn off the power. And while he's running downstairs, Ken Foray,
this all wakes up Ken Foray,
who runs out of the room in, oh my God, the littlest red Speedo.
The tiniest underwear.
It's amazing.
Like this burnt orange Speedo.
Yeah.
And does he also still have the like gun, the like shoulder?
No, I think he's completely shirtless. Okay. And he's big and ripped.
Yeah. And he goes flying down those stairs. He falls down the stairs with Jeffrey, and they're just like, I mean, it's, I just wrote, my notes are just, a lot is happening.
Yeah, because they go in the basement, which is flooded, so now they're splashing around in this water together, fighting a giant tentacle down there.
Yeah, and it kind of is Demogorgon looking, this big, like,
it thing. Looks like that creature in the Star Wars cantina who dates the werewolf.
Yeah.
I forgot her name. Yeah, damn it. There was a Gleep glossary about
them.
I
know.
But, yeah, so it's like almost match cutting between Pretorius in the attic sucking on Barbara Crampton's head and this tentacle thing sucking on Jeffrey Combs's body.
Yeah.
While Ken Foray tries to like unplug the power, and he does eventually, and it makes Pretorius disappear, and it like saves them for that. But holy shit, it is a wild like 5 minute stretch of the movie.
On, yeah. This is around where I wrote that if she and Herbert West got together, unstoppable couple of science.
But now Jeffrey Combs in this movie is bald. That lamprey-looking thing just sucked his head,
his hair off.
Which, right off.
I don't know why that didn't happen to Barbara.
Well, I don't know.
But
and I will say, when Ken Foray first carries him out of the basement, I think the bald cap looked pretty bad, but the rest of the movie looks really good.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck does this, like, it's him holding weird, like weird baby Jack. And I'm just like, am I thinking of Harry Potter, the, like, where Voldemort's, like, all weird and bald?
There's something.
I don't know, what, there's, like, some movie that I'm thinking of, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but Barbara finds all the BDSM stuff, like,
yes,
in that room they were in earlier, but she opens up the closets and finds all the,
because Ken Foray's like, get dressed, I'm gonna go start
That's
the
right.
car.
He's like, we're leaving, put clothes on, we're getting out of here. And she's like, okay, I'll get dressed. So she goes into the BDSM closet and puts on all this BDSM gear.
Oh my god,
good lord.
It is like, it is butt floss.
It's
it
butt floss, yeah.
The tiniest string.
I mean, I just was like, that was more of her ass than I thought we were going to see in this movie. And I just couldn't.
Because she, like, straddles the passed out Jeffrey Combs after feeling his junk.
Yeah, she's like, it's like, it's weird. She's feeling him and she's like starting to give him a handy. Then she like licks her fingers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She licks his crotch fingers, man.
Yeah.
And then she, gets on top
all
of him.
Like, he's got, like, a rash. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah. And he's not conscious. It's not okay.
Yeah, and he's all weird and bald. Like, it's just... It's a lot happening. But, yeah. Oh, my God. This little thong. I just... All I could think was, like, you would just have to get your whole body waxed.
Yeah.
To be on film with the butt flaws.
It is.
Props.
Tiny, man.
I know. I mean, it looks great
she
on
looks
her.
Looks great. And that's when Ken Foray comes
Foray walks
back
in
and
is
like,
damn it, I told you to get dressed. His face at this part is so funny. And I'm sad that a lot of you will just be listening to this. But I forget what she... Oh, he goes, I told you to get dressed. And she goes, I did. And his face is just...
And he's wearing this football jersey.
He has
a football jersey. Number
I'm like, where did you get this?
What
why?
Is your wardrobe?
His wardrobe is so weird because either he brought it with him, which, like, why? And or it was from the house, which, like, again, why? I don't know. It's just so funny. His outfits.
Yeah.
The one, his first outfit that he shows up in is so, he's got like that kind of ivory turtleneck and the like tan leather jacket on, like,
oh,
the classic cop, like he like a cool cop.
It belies what he's doing the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He's also just rocking a stash in this movie. It's great. But then he like he holds her in front of a mirror. He's like, look at
you.
Is that who you are?
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, she clearly, this is like
that repression.
It's that where it's like, this is this really her? Because she, you know, for all we can tell, she's into it. She's like, you know, super turned on by all of this. And, you know, but also, is this actually her? And we see her look at herself and feel ashamed and confused. I was reading someone's review of this where they kind of outlined this movie as a metaphor for addiction. And I could see that, too.
I mean, he even says, like, you may be
you're
a doctor,
acting
but
like
you're acting
junkie.
Like a junkie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She just always has to get her fix. And I like that reading a lot. But I think the angle of like sexual repression is really interesting too, because it's like once she, it's like the high of it is worn off or someone else sees her doing it and then there's a reason to be ashamed, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it's not private anymore and mm-hmm. it's someone pointing out that it's wrong and disgusting. Yeah. So the resonator, again, we see is being started up, but it's being started up from beyond. It's like the electricity is just jumping from the walls to the broken, like,
yeah,
like
it just turns itself on.
It's turning itself on, yeah.
And they all wind up in the attic again where the resonator is, and they're getting covered by what look like glass beads?
I thought it reminded me of, you know, how, like, those little tiny styrofoam balls? Do you know, or like, you know when you get styrofoam and if you break it and it's in tiny pieces and it's, like, static clingy and
yeah.
you'll never get it? That's what it looked like. It looked like dark-colored styrofoam bits that
yeah.
they just threw at them because it would stick like that because it's
sticking to them and
it's
then
so weird.
It sticks to Barbara Crampton and Jeffrey Combs for a bit, but then it comes after Ken Foray and
yeah, this is
eats
so
his
gross.
Skin off, dude. I didn't expect him to go out so quickly.
Yeah,
and his like it's an awesome gnarly looking
it's
body.
So gross. He basically gets it's like his body is just nubs and it's like muscle and sinew and
it gives way to another funny chalk outline.
Yeah,
later,
the chalk
the
outline
nubs.
Is funny. It's just nubs. Yeah. Yeah. R.A.P. Bubba.
Mm-hmm.
Crawford's forehead gland pops out.
Oh, yeah. This is, if you've seen anything from the movie, it's probably Jeffrey Combs with his little pineal gland sticking out of his forehead.
Yeah.
It's like a little, I don't even know what I can compare it to. It's almost like an anglerfish type thing.
Yeah, it's like a little antenna that pops out.
Mm-hmm. It's just kind of laying there.
It's gross.
And I think, what, Pretorius shows up again? Because doesn't he say humans are so easy?
Yeah, and he's like, now you can truly see. And Jeffrey Combs is like, oh, it's so beautiful because now he can see in like 4D or whatever.
Oh, that's right.
And then it cuts to pineal gland vision, and it's fucking Predator vision. It's like,
yeah.
It's like that 80s music video. Like, I don't even know what you would call that effect.
Pretorius is saying how he wants to like literally mind fuck Barbara Crampton.
Yeah.
Like their minds will meld together.
Mm-hmm. And that's when she grabs a fire extinguisher and starts hitting the machine with it.
Splooges all over that machine.
Yeah, she freezes it up.
Yeah, that stops that for the time being.
So they're both, we kind of cut to, they're both brought to the hospital. And so I guess, yeah, again, RIP, Bubba. So they're just like, cool, you guess you murdered that dude too.
Yeah.
Jeffrey escapes his room pretty much immediately at the hospital. I don't know how this is allowed to happen.
Well, it's after that shot of Dr. Block, who is Carolyn Purdy Gordon. She's like inspecting his little pineal gland hole in his forehead.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an effect that
is
done
this is a cool effect.
Because it's clearly Jeffrey Combs' actual eyes. Mm-hmm. It's like a close-up of his
head.
Yeah, it's not a fake head. But this hole in his forehead looks so deep. And there is the pineal gland appendage coming out of it.
It's cool.
It's very cool. Good job, John Carl Beekler.
I think, I mean, if I had to guess how the effect is done, I think it's just there's an appliance all over his like head and neck. And so by applying, you know, and they have maybe like a hose run up the back of his neck and maybe behind
the
his
side,
ear.
Yeah,
and,
side of his head.
And maybe like over one eye and then out. And I think they just make it so that his entire head looks kind of veiny and bulgy so that you're blending in the fact that one side of his head necessarily has to be bigger for this effect to work. And I think just like it all evens itself out to where it doesn't really look like there's anything fake just like on him. It's really cool.
It's very cool. Awesome effects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
he does escape his room, grab some spinach and eats
it.
He
grabs this like sandwich and there's like spinach on this plate and food just doesn't do it for him anymore. He's hungry.
So he has to go find the brains that they're keeping.
He wants brains.
Eats brains.
Meanwhile, Barbara Crampton's going to get electroshock therapy.
Yeah, because again, I would love to read a analysis of this movie from a sexual perspective, because Dr. Block is very critical of Barbara Crampton.
Yeah, look what she came back dressed up in.
Yeah, she like tears open her jacket and is like, look at what she's wearing.
Then they realize, Jeffrey Combs has escaped. Cancel the electroshock because he went and he sucked out Dr.
Block's
eyeball after she caught him eating brains, and she's like, oh, honey, like, please don't eat that. It's not good for you. It's going to make you sick. And then he looks at it and is like, ugh. But then we realize he only is grossed out because, it is gross to not be eating a live brain. That thing's been sitting there for who knows how long.
Yeah, we see his vision and it's like her live brain.
Pineal vision. And then he sees her tasty live brain in her head. And then he sucks out her brain via her eyeball socket.
Mm-hmm.
It's gross.
It's a good
and
one.
And I just like that Stewart had to be like, okay, now keep sucking on my wife's eyeball. Keep going. No, don't. Just keep.
You know what? I've seen weirder shit.
I know.
I've seen weirder shit of directors directing their wives
it's
with other actors.
Dude, that's always my favorite thing. It's so like
it's so weird.
Tim Burton and Helena Bonham Carter are like, okay, Johnny Depp, now right, suck on my wife's eyeball. Keep going. Don't stop.
Yeah. So somehow Barbara Crampton gets away too, just during all the mayhem, and she drives off in an ambulance, and then Jeffrey Combs kills a couple of paramedics.
He also drives off in an ambulance. They just both hijack an ambulance, and they drive back to the house. This is the final act, the final set piece, rather.
And I don't know how Barbara Crampton got some, like, fucking dynamite. It's like an explosive
with a timer on it. This is a little ridiculous.
Just throws one line of where she got this from.
Because it's the same night, and
she
shows up before Jeffrey Combs, so she must have gotten there pretty quickly. And in that span of time, she has gotten a cartoon, like an Acme Corporation, like stack of dynamite with a timer.
For sure. And she is ready to blow up this resonator no matter
and
how horny
when,
it makes her.
Yeah, but now I guess Jeffrey horny because he, he like, locks her up in the BDSM thing, and he's like, I love you, and I'm gonna suck your eyeball while you're hooked up in these straps.
And she stops him by castrating his pineal gland.
Yes.
She fuck it with her teeth.
It's so gross. And it's weird because I would have no frame of reference for how much this would hurt because this isn't a real appendage people have. But for some reason, I like the imagery of her biting off the pineal gland that's poking out of his head is like, I felt it. It was. Yeah. It's so gross and crunchy, and it looks like it hurts really
when
bad.
When she bit off that pineal gland, I felt that.
Yeah, I felt that.
And Pretorius is back.
Pretorius is back, and he's a big old like monster.
Yeah, and I was on four legs.
Yeah, he's been on four legs for a bit. Oh, he's like the big head that's like all.
It's
kind of
like the Thing head.
It is.
You know, it definitely reminded me of
what
that,
I thought
the
of.
Head. And but now that the pineal gland has been ripped off of Jeffrey Combs' head, he's back.
He's
to
like,
normal.
Oh, fuck.
What have I been up to?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's his post-cum clarity.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, it's post-cum clarity for sure. It's like, oh no, what have I been watching? then the eel things, they go in like, I think, at first I thought they were like, you're helping. Free, but no, I think it's just because they're like trying to eat.
They react to
motion.
They react
to movement.
So she moves her hands and they bite off the
straps
restraints.
So she can get out.
So she's a smart lady.
Yeah, she can jump out the window before the bomb goes off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's after Pretorius eats up Jeffrey Combs.
Yes. This is like, I mean, this is the clear finale set piece of effects. It's, you know, Jeffrey Combs gets his head twisted off, bitten off, but then he is brought back from beyond. He like bursts out of Pretorius and tells her to run and
he's like punching his way out.
He's basically fighting Pretorius from Pretorius's inside, and it's just a mass of limbs. And then there's like they're two skeletons.
Oh yeah, their heads are like
it's
clinging.
So fucking cool.
It's like the end of Reanimator with all the crazy reanimated zombies in the hospital.
Yeah.
And even though Gordon didn't do Reanimator 2, it's like that end where it's in their lab underground,
yes,
and all the bodies and creations,
yes,
break out. Like,
yeah.
I love
his weird like secret room.
Yeah.
In that movie.
Yeah, with all the fucking Screaming Mad George creations.
Yeah.
But I love it when because so often I think a movie will have me interested for the first act into the second, and then the third act I'm like bored with.
Yeah.
It. But like these movies just get so
third
balls to the
set
walls
pieces
by then.
Where it's like here's. I mean, we've had crazy makeup this whole time, but like we're gonna go absolutely,
yes,
nuts. Society also, duh.
Oh,
the,
fuck,
the,
yeah,
pinnacle
that's,
that,
that's the pinnacle of
third
it.
Act special effects.
Screaming
is,
Mad.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh,
yes.
That was also Screaming Mad George.
It was also
shunting.
Screaming Mad,
okay,
George. Fuck yeah, dude. So yeah, she jumps out that like second story window or even higher. It's an attic.
Yeah, it's high. It's like three stories. And
well,
her,
like,
I mean, her leg
explosion.
Gets fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then that neighbor lady finds her and is like, I called the ambulance.
Yeah.
And then
everyone's kind of crowded around looking at her and looking at the house. And then she just
starts laughing.
She says it ate him, which is what Jeffrey Combs said at the beginning.
Oh, that's right.
He was like, it ate him. And
that's probably why she's laughing. She sees the
irony. She goes, oh, my God, it's all come full circle. It ate,
yeah,
him. And now they all think I'm crazy. And that's the end. Yeah, it's a circular.
Man.
Yeah.
I so enjoyed this movie.
Like, I'll admit, just because, like, the recent, you know, like, the virus sucks and is scary and being cooped up inside. Like, we work from home, but still not being able to leave.
Yeah.
It does a number
I miss
on you.
Orange
Theory,
and man.
Just the news and and, like, you know, I'm in, like, a weird place with all of it. And it's been harder to just get any work done, period. And, but I will say, like, watching this movie specifically, I got such, like, a rejuvenating jolt of like, oh, I love horror movies.
Oh, good.
And I love discovering ones I haven't seen and getting to review them and, you know, like, yeah, be entertained, not have it feel like work the entire, you know, like, oh yeah, this is like why I started doing this.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear that because even earlier today, because we watched this today just a few hours ago, and it's a very quick turnaround on this, but even earlier today, you were like, should we maybe do a newer movie? Because those kind of do better in the views and listens, which is unfortunate. I wish people
I
would check out these classics.
I know, me too.
But we wanted to honor Stuart Gordon,
yeah,
and I'm glad we did because, like, sure, there's new movies that we're thinking about doing will be enjoyable, but, like, this is so good.
And then I was like, am I just going to be sad, if we're doing, like, a tribute episode, and it's like, I'm just thinking about, like, we've lost someone, and, like, am I just going to be bummed out? But I'm like, no, it's like, you know, that this is what people like Stuart Gordon wanted to leave us with is like, these are fun schlock and like a good time, and you know,
we're celebrating him.
Yeah, and it was a good movie to review. It was nice seeing all my faves.
Yeah, I know, it's great. You know. I'm going to be trying to check out Dolls pretty soon because Reanimator, From Beyond, and Dolls. And then we didn't even mention this in our rundown of him at the top. That's after right. those three horror movies, he came up with the story for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah.
He didn't like end up writing the screenplay, and I think he was attached to direct and then didn't for some reason.
It is amazing that when you think about it, the doctor played by oh my god, why am I blanking on his name? I'm just having a major brain fart. The dad in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis, yeah. Thank you. Is the kid friendly the Disney Herbert West? Really, yeah. He is. He absolutely is. He's the fun, cuddly Herbert West with a family and a house and a, you know, it's kind of great. Makes perfect sense that that's where his career ended up going. Yeah, I love it.
So, I'm going to try to check out Dolls because that's another one that I haven't seen. I've seen Castle Freak once, but I know you haven't.
I haven't seen Castle Freak.
I would like to rewatch it. That was mid-90s that he did with also Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton, which is so cool. Mm-hmm. And then he did a bunch of other movies that I also have yet to see. I think his last directing one was like 2009, though, so it's been a while. Mm-hmm. He's been, I think he went back to theater, and he did write and direct and produced Reanimator the Musical.
I didn't know he was involved with that.
That was his product, yeah. And I think it was very well received.
I like that. Because sometimes I get a little, I'm like, oh, okay, we don't have to make everything into a musical. But that's cool that, like,
it was him.
It all kind of comes full circle.
Exactly. Yeah, because he started in stage came back and did that. So, and I know he did a Masters of Horror episode.
Yeah, I forget.
Was it a Poe adaptation with Combs?
Was it? I know Combs has played Poe.
Yeah. I forget. I get mixed up in all the intertwining stories.
Yeah, I mean, there's
a
lot of Masters of Horror episodes. I forget which one he did.
Yeah. But, I mean, fucking, I'm real sad that we'll never get to speak to him and just, like, be in his presence.
Yeah.
After.
Because in my experience, too, all those, as much as, like, you know, oh my god, they're living legends, and it's like they're the Masters of Horror, they also, in my experience, have all been really nice people and easy to talk to and really interesting and have really cool stories. And if you get the chance to ever meet, you know, one of these guys or gals, do it
while you can. You know, really do it while you can. So thanks to Stuart Gordon for everything he gave us and this wild movie that I'm so glad to have finally watched. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll watch it a bunch more, and I'm sure it'll eventually be a kill count because it's so fun. You can find us on social media, Dead Meat James on Twitter and Instagram.
And I'm at Carebecc, C-A-R-E-B-E-C-C on Twitter and Instagram. And if I'm merch, deadmeatstore.com.
And you said you're reordering Golden Shanks all pins?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how.
Everything's messed up right now.
Everything is slow,
you know?
And weird right now, so be patient with not just me, but like the people who like run the actual
manufacturers
store.
Until next time, I'm James.
I'm Chelsea.
This has been the Dead Meat Podcast.